Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Hi there, and welcome to a live edition of Leading Edge Medicine. We are, in fact, live most of the time. Very rare do we record a show. It's when we're all on vacation or it's a holiday weekend.
For instance, Christmas Eve, we'll probably
pre-record
it.
New Year's Eve, yeah. You may not want to be in a studio with... although we would have fun doing the show. Yeah, we would totally have fun. But we are here and love answering your questions. Of course, Dr. Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat taking a weekend off. We have Dr. Ken Pentland here, and we're going to talk more about something pretty exciting that we're now offering at Longevity Clinics, which, of course, sponsors the show, Leading Edge Medicine. And if you're not a patient, then you need to come in, just like Mary did. That's who Philip was talking about a little bit ago. He said, Mary comes in. She loves it, loves the program. Find out more and get your health back. Don't you want to be leaner?
Stronger, faster, smarter, sexier, and of course,
happier. We all have smiles on our faces. We want you to be the best that you can be as you're aging and as you're dealing with potential problems, which is why we offer the free health analysis appointment still for you. It's basically a way for you to come in, let us introduce you to the clinic, do two tests for you, a blood test and an in-body test. And this will give the doctor and the therapist there, the assistants, information about what you could be at risk for down the road, like cancer and dementia, sexual dysfunction, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, cancers, and so much more. And if you're at risk, wouldn't you want to know before you're in the throes of that? Mm-hmm. Well, of course, find out what you can do about that. That's why we offer the free health analysis appointment. Of course, when you come in and we see some risks, you can also get another blood panel test, which is way less expensive than the $2,000 test my friend took. We charge just under $600 for this. But boy, you get all sorts of information on your hormone levels, not just one page of what's going on in your body.
Pages and pages.
Pages and pages.
About 72 pages.
There you go. You will get a notebook on what your body is, what's doing and what it's not doing and what it could be doing. And that's why the doctors at Longevity, you know, they care.
Well, and interestingly, we are adding a new test to that.
Ooh.
That panel, which we're adding one called a DNA methylation test, where we're actually looking at your genetic code and see how much damage has been done to your DNA at this point in your life.
Wow.
And use that as a marker for how well you're aging. Mm-hmm. So we are doing our standard 70-some pages worth of stuff, plus we are now adding this new DNA test.
All right.
To look at your DNA.
Can't wait to take a look at that.
Well, that'll be so good to know. Yeah. And to know that you can do something about this to hopefully alleviate those symptoms, get your energy back, get your health back. And like Dr. Mixon says, leaner, stronger, faster, smarter.
And sexier.
Oh, yes.
Which will make you
happier. Yes, we want to get you in.
If it doesn't make you happy, it'll make your lover happy.
Yes, you go. You'll both be happier and feel much better. Absolutely. Call for your free health analysis appointment. That's what we call it. 866-86-YOUNG is that number to call. 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, lmclinic.com. And if you haven't, you know, that's a great place to go. You can do it on your computer or relax with your phone. Get some information about the clinic, Dr. Mixon, even some videos there so you can see him talking about different things that we address on the show. So very important, and we invite you to be part of it. And that's why we're here every single Saturday. The show is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinic. Yeah. All right. Well, this is Leading Edge Medicine. Before we jump into our next call, let's talk about something that Dr. Pentland, this is exciting. This is something that I used to hear. Oh, J-Lo had her vitamin V infusion to get more energy for her concert. And I'm like, what? How come she gets to do that, but I can't get more energy with an infusion?
You can now.
You can, and you can get it at Longevity.
So it's back to school season and more human contact, more risk for infection and things like that going on. Also, more people expending a lot of energy, low energy, increased risk for respiratory illness, things like that. Introducing at Kirkland Clinic now, we have IV vitamin therapy.
Nice.
Available. Yeah. It's not available at all clinics yet, but it is available for both patients and non-patients. So energy boost, mental clarity, immune support, if you're just getting over something or you're going on travel. Lots of reasons to get this done, and it's $199.
Yeah. Wow. And how long does it take to get an infusion?
It's about an hour appointment.
Okay, not an injection. It's an infusion. What's the difference?
Well, so an injection, you just get like a shot in the arm.
Okay.
Right, but an infusion, it's an hour. It's like a 45-minute drip.
Okay. So they hang a bag.
Yep, they hang a bag, and it goes right into the bloodstream, so it's a really good absorption compared to just taking a pill.
All right. How soon will you see a difference?
Usually about
level?
30 minutes.
Oh, wow. So driving home, you should feel good. Forget that afternoon coffee. All right. An IV vitamin therapy. And you can ask for that if you're a patient at Longevity, correct?
Even non-patients.
We're offering that to everybody that wants it.
That's good to know. So that might be a good way for you to come in and just kind of meet our staff and get to know the folks at Longevity.
Yep. We'll do a quick questionnaire, see, you know, what's going on with you, and then we'll sign the paperwork and get you set up.
There you go. All right. Ask for the IV vitamin therapy. And Dr. Pentland knows all about that. All right, let's go back to the phones and let's see here. We have another caller. This time we are headed to Yelm. Ray has a question for us. Good morning, Ray. Thank you for holding.
Hello, Ray.
Hi, Dr. Mitchell. How are you doing? The question was, I had asked a couple weeks ago, we'll have her answered, about the collagen thing, about the grass-fed bovine stuff that they make now. We talked about collagen one day. You said they're shark collagen and things like that. And,
right.
The bone, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We can. What were you wanting to know about that,
what
Ray?
What is the question?
Yeah.
Oh, did you look into it? I had asked him whether you had mentioned everything except bovine and grass-fed and pasture-grown.
Yes. The only things that I have been able to find in the literature is that if you're getting collagen isolates from the grass-fed cattle, etc., you're not getting the hormones, you're not getting the extraneous sorts of stuff that go to the standard feedlot cattle. You know, they shoot them up with a whole lot of hormones and so on to get them to grow fast, because every day the farmer is feeding them, that's money out of his profit. Okay. So the idea is to get them.
They throw all kinds of stuff like cherry and broccoli and maca and green tea and strawberry and acerola and all kinds of other stuff in it, too. Anyway, yeah. And then also, Doc, this thing with the coronavirus, a couple of people right near where I live, they're all over 65, and I'm 70 by now, and they start, one threw up, his girlfriend threw up, and then the next day he caught something, and they both had irritable bowels, incredible cramps, and diarrhea. And I went immediately and had myself checked out I took a test, the corona test, and I was negative. But still, I've got this laziness about my body and my forgetfulness. I still have also a post-nasal drip from the original corona I got back in 2000, back before they were even talking about it. And so my gym coach says, well, just stay away for a few more days, because it could take a week or two, I would think, if I caught it to develop. It takes so many supplements anyway.
Well, you know, coronavirus, it's 3 to 6 days for incubation period. So most of the time, if you get exposed, you know, within the first week, you will get your symptoms if you're going to get them. But the question is this...
And I had been around people. I'd been to different meetings. I've been to the gym, so AA, you know, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Sure. But it may not be, you know, it may not be coronavirus. I mean, there are millions of viruses in this world. And, you know, some of them like our guts and some of them like our respiratory trees. Some of them like our skin. A few of them like our brains. And so, you know, you may well have contracted a viral illness that is something other than COVID.
Also, I've been, you know, I was taking prazosin for a while for my prostate, and then it made, you know, made me so lightheaded at the gym, I was passing out. You talked about some female hormone that you guys would use instead of prazosin and stuff like that for prostate, something that shrunk the prostate, a woman's supplement of something.
Well, it's not really a woman's, but it is one that many people think of as woman's. It's called progesterone. And young men have high progesterone levels, as we age, like all of the other steroid hormones in our body, our progesterone levels drop and drop and drop. And as our progesterone levels get low, those alpha estrogen receptors in the prostate start to immortalize the cells and make them live longer and longer and longer. So the prostate gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The progesterone helps to prevent that further enlargement. It doesn't make it shrink. Or at least I don't have any data that says it shrinks. But the idea is to stop it from continuing to get bigger. And that's why I put most of my men on progesterone.
Yeah, I thought so. And I talked to my guy. He said, well, I can test it for you. I said, well, can you give it to me? And he said, well, I think I got to get into your place for sure. I mean, I've been taking the supplements for 6 years already and what I can get. And I haven't seen Todd Killebrew, I think it was his name. Is he still in Tacoma?
No, yeah, Todd bought a farm in Virginia. So he and his wife moved to Virginia, and they're farming out there and having a wonderful life.
There you go. Yeah, it's kind of scary when we say he bought the farm. He's still alive. He's just enjoying his life in Virginia.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I like that he played guitar. I play guitar. Also, I have this cyst on my wrist, and they aspirated it once, and VA is horrible right now. I couldn't get anyone. Four referrals, and they never wrote them down. And she was asking me all the things I was doing for myself, you know. Anyway, there was another question. God darn it.
Was it about your cyst on your wrist?
I got a hand surgeon that'll aspirate it at the VA, but I got to wait. I don't know how long. But it started up again. I've had, God, Lord, what is it? I had so many questions. I got to get into this place. That's all there is to it.
There you go.
Come on in. Become a patient. Let us help you.
Well, you know, I just got an automobile. I've been on that bicycle 14 years and going across it. So, thank God, what else?
We want to keep you on that bicycle.
That's right.
No, you want me back in the car so I can get to your office.
Yes, we do.
All right.
Yes, we do.
You can ask all the questions you want.
Yeah, I got one more. And what was it? Oh, I did get the shot for the shingles because I had shingles, it did hurt. It hurt me for a long time because my shoulders were all torn up, the ligaments and bursa and rotator cuff and all that nonsense. So I figure if I can, I'm doing pretty good. So anyway, God willing, I'll see you soon.
That's right.
Okay, take care, my friend.
You keep going, Ray. Awesome. All right. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We're taking your calls, and we have Leroy next, calling in from Tacoma. Hi, Leroy.
Hi. Happy birthday to you.
Congratulations,
doctor.
Happy birthday, Dr. Mixon. On Monday.
I was talking to my wife the other day about that, and you know, I'm still making plans for the next 30 years.
Good.
So I have, you know, this is just it's a milestone, but it is one of many yet to come. So
there you go.
Let's just keep keeping on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, how can I help you, sir?
I'm 78. I had an EKG on 12/20. The doctor said it was gorgeous. I was in for my, wellness check Monday. I did an EKG, and I've got LBBB.
Okay, so left bundle branch block. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a stress test, I had an echo yesterday, and I'm going to be on a monitor on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So
good.
What?
Well,
and I fly airplanes.
Okay, well, I don't know if that's going to impact your license or not. So whenever, enjoy your flying at least until your next physical. Left bundle branch block, for those of you who don't know, the left ventricle is the big main pumping chamber to the heart. And it's what pumps that blood out through the aorta and spreads it to every tissue in your body. The left bundle branch is the electrical conduction system that makes that ventricle contract in a nice organized manner. And what's happened here is the microcirculation, the tiny, tiny arterioles that carry the blood supply in single file. I mean, these vessels are so tiny, the red blood cells go through in single file. They don't go through in a pipe.
Wow.
And those tiny, tiny vessels, of course, clot off real easy. And so he's lost enough of that microcirculation that the electrical impulses in that bundle are now being blocked.
Okay.
And so it is spreading across his heart in a diffuse manner instead of going like a super highway of nerve fiber. And that gives him less efficiency in his blood pumping. And so it's not a crisis. It doesn't mean you're going to topple over. Many people live 20, 30 years with bundle branch blocks, but it tells us that the microcirculation in your body is starting to go bad, and we need to do everything we can to make it better. And so if you are a patient at Longevity, tell your doctor about it and say, hey, I want to be really aggressive with my program. I want to do everything I can do. And if you're not a patient at Longevity, get your butt in there and become one.
There you go.
Well, I was told that, I don't know, whoever the technician was doing the echo says, well, it's old. It wore out. But he said I had three. And he said if I lost the right one, I would just, my heartbeat would slow. But I'm not going to tip over and die. So whatever. I will see what the cardiologist says on September 8th after we do the monitor.
All right, take care. Bye-bye, sir.
All right. Oh, thank you for your call, Leroy. We are going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more of your questions. Ron and Rob, you're next. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Some Billy Ray Cyrus.
That's right.
Still love that song. Oh, achy breaky heart. But we don't want you to have an achy breaky heart. No.
Which is why
we
have most of our men on tadalafil, testosterone, right? And
taurine, you were mentioning.
Taurine, and now many of them on rapamycin.
Okay. All things good for your heart.
Acid.
All those things we want to do to dilate that microcirculation and keep things like bundle branch blocks from happening.
Okay, that LBBB that he was talking about.
The technician told this guy, well, you know, it's just old, it's wear out. Yeah, but that's how it's wearing out.
Yes.
It's, you know, you're losing your microcirculation, and you're getting poor blood supply to that nerve-conducting fiber. And I wouldn't be shocked if the same guy is probably getting some altered sensation in his toes and so on, because, you know, those are those long nerves that go all the way from the spine down to the feet.
Okay.
We need to keep that from happening.
That's why we want you to come into Longevity, because if you go to your doctor and say, could you write me a prescription for this, 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 and this?
He'll say no.
He'll go, no, no. That's why you need to come into Longevity. Don't just take it as a, you're getting old, or sorry, or mm-mm.
That's the way it is.
That's the way it is.
Right.
Just normal for your age.
Well,
no.
That sucks.
Yeah, and we want to do something about it. So get in to Longevity. The number to call, 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. All right. More phone calls on the way. We have Ron calling in from Tukwila. Hi, Ron.
Hello, Ron.
Hi, good morning, guys.
How can we help?
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Concerning the rapamycin, can you tell us how much you take and how often you take it?
Yeah, I can. But the question is, will I? Let's see.
We don't want you to go.
Samira was here. What would she say?
Yes, we don't want you to go find somebody to get a dose of this.
Well, I mean, if you find somebody that's good with it. Uh-huh. Rapamycin is an interesting drug because nobody knows what the ideal dose is. That's the problem.
Okay.
Rapamycin is a drug that has extended the lifespan on every animal we have ever tried it on, from worms to fruit flies to mice to rats to dogs to monkeys to, now we think, people. The problem is people live so darn long. But we now know that people that are on rapamycin for their organ transplants, for instance, and we've had people now on rapamycin for those 5-6 years, so we're getting data on thousands of people, they're living longer. They have much lower incidence of cancer. They get a lower risk of heart disease, get a lower risk of dementia. And it looks like it's extending human lifespan, too. The question is, what is the ideal dose? Mm. And we're guessing. We're guessing because it's going to take us another 20, 30 years to sort that out as we watch people trying different doses. I know people taking as little as 4 milligrams a week, once a week. Mm-hmm. I know people taking 12 and 15 milligrams once a week. And once a week seems to be the most common dosing regimen. In the animal studies, what we have found is how long they live is a direct function of how high the dose they take. The higher the dose, the longer they live. So if you put them down on a modest dose, you'll get a 15% increase. If you get a higher dose, you'll get a 20% increase. If you hit them with what we now think of as really high dose, you'll get a 25% increase in lifespan. Well, that's pretty darn good. If you figure the average person lives to be nearly 80, and you get 25% beyond that, that's another 16 years. That would get you up to 96.
We'll take it.
But what is the upper limit? Mm-hmm. And we don't really know. So we make guesstimates. And interestingly, we are using rapamycin differently than we do any other drug. If every other drug we take whatever dose we need to treat the symptom or the problem. If you're given an antibiotic, you want to take enough to kill the bacteria. If you're taking an anti-cancer drug, you want to take enough to kill the cancer. If you're taking a drug for your blood pressure, you want to take enough to lower your blood pressure. And then we accept whatever side effects we need to that go along with accomplishing what we want, right? So if we lower your blood pressure, and the result is you get a little dizzy when you stand up once a week, or you pee more often, or you have some minor headache, we accept that because we say, well, it's worth it to lower the blood pressure. Mm-hmm. With rapamycin, most of the people taking the doses are taking the highest dose they can get away with and have no side effects. But that's different. They're not shooting to get a particular effect. They're shooting to get no side effects. Mm-hmm. And at some point, the side effects may be worth the benefit to ratchet the dose up.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so we are still feeling our way. This is such a new drug that we don't have hard and fast. We develop protocols to say this is where we're starting people. This is where we're treating them. But there's flexibility among the doctors. We know where we want to start them. We don't know where we're going to end up. And the reason I said that is that some weeks I push my dose fairly high by current standards. Some weeks I'm taking 6 milligrams a week. There are rare weeks that I'll go ahead and kick it up to 10 or 12 milligrams, twice that. There was a dog study that Dr. Kaeperlein did over at University of Washington. he did a 10-week dog study. He gave these old dogs really a high dose that if you translated it to a human my size would have been 27 milligrams, 28 milligrams a week.
Wow.
For those dogs.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. That's way more than the average person is taking, because most people are taking about 5 milligrams a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I do typically 6, but occasionally I'll jump it in even higher. In 10 weeks, though, those dogs, those old dogs, they did echocardiograms on the dogs before they started and after they, at the end of 10 weeks. In only 10 weeks, they remodeled the hearts on those dogs so that those old dogs were pumping blood more efficiently from those old hearts in just 10 weeks.
Wow.
But that was on a super high dose, 28 milligrams a week that would have been for a human.
Did the dogs get mouth sores?
No.
Yes. And I was wondering, did they learn new tricks?
Well, they did. And they played with their masters more. Their appetites increased. They, you know, they did great. In humans, the side effects that we know about are there is an increased risk of mouth sores. You get these little raw spots in your mouth because that mucous membrane doesn't heal as well and then turn over as quickly. And blood sugar tends to rise, and cholesterol tends to rise. So the question is, how high are you willing to let your blood sugar go, and how high are you willing to take your cholesterol to push your dose up? And, you know, that's something that requires someone following these parameters. We need to be following your blood work kind of closely so that we can adjust your dose based on how you're doing. I found that I tried to work my way up to the doses the dogs were taking. I didn't get that high.
Okay.
I got my dose up to about 18 milligrams for a couple of weeks. But at 18 milligrams a week, I felt wonderful. I almost euphoric. I felt so good. I mean, I just woke up in the morning and wanted to sing. But... And if you've heard me sing, that's pretty dramatic, because I got about a 3-note range. And beyond that, it's pretty pathetic.
Oh boy!
But my sugar was rising and my cholesterol was rising, so I damped my dose back down. So now most weeks I'm at about 6 milligrams, but then when I get my blood tests and I see that my sugar and cholesterol are in a pretty decent range, I may push it high for a week or two and get it up to 8, 10, 12 for a week or two, and then I back it back down. Because I'm trying to push to get my lowest risk of cancer, my lowest risk of dementia, my lowest risk of aging, to thicken up my bones, to make me pee like a young man. I get a lot of really good effects, but I don't want that sugar and cholesterol to be too high.
Right.
And I've never had trouble with the so-called mouth sores. I've never seen that in me, at least. Does that answer your question?
I appreciate it very much. I have a very quick story for you. In dental school, first year, gross anatomy, we 4 dental students per cadaver. And we started reading the book and making the incisions, and nothing was where it was supposed to be. And we called the instructor over and he said, you 4 gentlemen, put your scalpels down, back away from the table. And he wheeled that cadaver off into his lab because it had sinus inversus viscera.
Oh, no.
There's another one.
That's probably a test, and you passed.
My cadaver, we nicknamed him Popeye because he had big anchors tattooed on his shoulders.
Oh, boy. Oh, thank you for your call, Ron. The music means we take a break, and we will be back. We're going to talk with Rob, and also we're going to talk with Dr. Pentland about GI health. So important. We've been getting a lot of stomach issue questions today and gastro-inter-big-word-day. So we're going to talk to Dr. Pentland about that next. And, Rob, we're going to get to your call as well. Stay tuned. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back.
Now the race is on, and here comes pride in the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside. My tears are holding back there, and I'm trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. Two love scratch for another saint. The race is on, and it looks like heartache, and the winner loses all.
And good morning, Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, here with the most wonderful doctors, Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio and Dr. Ken Pentland as well. Rob, we're going to get to your call in just a moment. We may have some good information for you, though. So listen to this. Dr. Pentland, since we have you in the studio and you are our gut guy, all things gut and GI health, you had some very important things that we needed to address today. Let's jump into this first for just a few minutes.
Yeah, I really wanted to talk about this because, in my experience in the GI field, it showed me that people take GI health for granted and they'll greatly overlook their symptoms as long as they can get away with taking a Tums or Imodium or laxative or Gas-X. And, I really became interested in GI health when I began studying traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture. They revere digestive health as the root of overall health. In Chinese medicine, they talk about the qi, the movement of energy in the body. And all the old texts say, there's a saying that says the five viscera and the six bowels are endowed with qi from the stomach. And if the stomach qi is great, the five viscera will receive great benefit. And so it's hugely important for overall health. In general, everyone's a little different, but in general, folks should be having 1 to 3 bowel movements a day.
They
should be well-formed. Okay. They should not be like pebbly. They should be easy to pass without pain or urgency.
Okay.
It should be light to dark, medium brown, and there should be no uncomfortable gas or bloating. But that's not usually the reality for a lot of people.
Wow. Okay. So what is normal? You're going to talk about that?
It should be 1 to 3 per day,
Okay.
and more, much more comfortable and easy to pass and everything like that. But the colon, it's 3 to 5 feet long, and its job is to absorb the remaining water and nutrients from the material passing through. The colon, 2.5 gallons of water pass through the colon every day.
Whoa. I don't drink that much water.
But it's in the food, in the tissues, and it gets filtered through the colon and recirculated.
Okay.
The problem is when the material sits in the colon too long, and you can tell because, the stool will become more pebbly looking. Mm. Another thing that passes through the colon is bile acid from the liver. And all sorts of waste materials dissolved in there. The liver's trying to eliminate that from the body. But the longer that waste sits in the colon, the more concentrated that bile becomes. And it starts to irritate the lining of the colon and you get inflammation.
And is that a tummy ache, a cramp?
No, it's you may not even notice it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just going on in the colon.
Not a good thing.
Not a good thing.
Okay.
And it just may be that you haven't had a bowel movement in a day or so. The liver is a big blood filter. Portal venous system takes blood from the intestines where the nutrients and toxins are absorbed. Takes them to the liver to be cleaned up, and after the blood is detoxified, the liver controls the release of those nutrients out into the systemic blood flow. The liver's detoxification occurs in many steps. One of them is called glucuronidation.
Whoa.
I'm talking about this because I'm leading to stool testing.
Okay.
And glucuronidation is part of the enzyme that controls that is what we're talking about. The glucuronidation step, its job is to slap a glucuronide molecule onto certain toxins, carcinogens, hormones, use drugs that go through the system and make them inactive so they can be safely transported in the bile out through the intestines. But if all goes according to plan, the body will be rid of those harmful substances. However, there are certain types of bacteria, good and bad, that make this enzyme that depackages those toxins. And now there's harmful substances running around in the colon. If that happens, they're free and floating around. And the longer the stool sits in the colon, the more likely that is to happen. Now, the name of that enzyme is called beta-glucuronidase. And if there's an overgrowth of these bacteria, these beta-glucuronidase-producing bacteria, like E. coli, for example, then the levels of beta-glucuronidase will rise. High levels of that are associated with increased toxicity in the colon, increased inflammation, intestinal lining damage, and colon, and even breast cancer.
Wow. Okay.
And this is something that people don't pay much attention
to. No, and if you're not having symptoms or pain, you may not know this is happening.
Right.
Okay.
But it could be going on for a long time, and people just kind of ignoring it.
Ooh.
So I really wanted to talk about that. High beta-glucuronidase levels are associated with high fat, high sugar diets, low fiber diets, a lot of processed food, frequent alcohol consumption, smoking, and poor hydration habits. Any of my patients out there will know that I'm always talking to them about water.
Yeah. How much should we drink?
Ideally, I always encourage patients to try to get half their body weight in ounces of water per day. It sounds like a lot. So if you weigh 100 pounds, that'd be 50 ounces. And it is a lot, but even if you get a third, you're still doing better than most people.
Okay. That's very important. That's an easy little math. Okay.
So another important gauge for general GI health besides 1 to 3 bowel movements a day is transit time, how long it takes for food between the time you swallow it to the time it exits the body.
Oh, yeah.
On average, Americans have way longer transit time than is healthy. When your system is working well, transit time should be 12 to 24 hours. But often people that are not even having significant GI symptoms will have transit times between 48 to 96 hours.
Whoa. So dinner on Sunday night could not exit until Wednesday or Thursday?
And it's just sitting there.
And it's just sitting, causing issues that
right.
you may not even be aware
right.
of. Okay.
So there's an
wow.
easy way to test your transit time. If
okay.
you have less than 12 hours, it means you may not be absorbing nutrients properly. If it's longer than 24 hours, waste material may be starting to irritate the colon and reabsorbing those toxins back into your system, increasing your risk for chronic disease. Right.
Okay.
So the method to test is to take about 5 grams of activated charcoal. You can get that at the supplement store in capsules. Take it with 12 ounces of water or more because it can be a little constipating. And write down the date and time you took it. Watch for dark gray or black stool and calculate the number of hours it took to pass.
Wow,
alternatively,
okay.
you could do that with, 3 or 4 whole beets.
Oh, okay.
Red beets will show up as well.
So you can mush them all up and have some beet soup or just...
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to be black stool looking
that
for.
That would be red.
A little prettier, but
yeah.
not alarming. Okay.
If you forget you ate the beets, you
could
get
scare
scared.
You.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Maybe stick with the charcoal. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
So now, if your regularity is not optimal and you have some GI symptoms that are persistent, recurring acid reflux, gas and mm-hmm. bloating, things like that, consider coming in, talking about getting a comprehensive stool analysis because we'll optimize your GI health and look for that elevated beta-glucuronidase.
Okay. Can you say that big word again?
Beta-glucuronidase is just that enzyme that we watch for. If it's elevated, can lead to increased risk
of cancer.
And that's
the thing we don't want.
That's what we... Well, it is necessary, but if it's too high, it's a problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. That's something good to know. Sometimes we just assume that last night's dinner was this morning, and that may not be necessarily the case. Thank you, doctor. You are the gut guy. Got a gut question? This is the day to call in because Dr. Pentland is here. And of course, you can see him. He is one of the doctors at our Longevity Medical Clinic. You are mainly in the Kirkland area, right?
That's
right. The Kirkland Clinic. All right. Dr. Pentland or Dr. Ken is who you want to ask for. All right. Well, we have our next caller is going in for an endoscopy or wanting to have some questions. You may be the guy to answer this. We're going to talk to Rob in the Tri-Cities. Hi, Rob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Saturday to everybody.
Yes.
Thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
We're
sure,
doing
fine.
Yeah.
I have suffered from heartburn for decades, and I blame my mother because she always was taking Tums and had horrible heartburn. My three kids have terrible heartburn. So anyway, I went in last year for my first endoscopy, and it showed a very large hiatal hernia, mm-hmm. along with, I believe it was grade 4 inflammation or stage 4 inflammation. There was no cancerous cells in the biopsy. However, that was concerning enough that my provider wants me to go in for another one here on September 7th. To check to see if the inflammation has gone down. I've been on omeprazole initially at 20 milligrams, now at 40 milligrams, and this has been long-term, and I know it's not a long-term drug. So I'm wondering what the pros and cons are for fixing that hernia or changing diet or both to get rid of this heartburn once and for all and, you know, kind of get a normal life back here for mm-hmm. not having to take that medicine.
How old are you?
69.
What do you weigh?
145.
Okay, so you're skinny. Good. All right, then in that situation, I'd say talk to a laparoscopist, someone that can do the GI surgery through a laparoscope and almost certainly get it fixed. Long-term GI reflux sets you up for esophageal cancers. That acid and digestive enzymes running up the esophagus where they're not supposed to be really can trigger mutation and malignancies in the cells. So I'd want to get that fixed as early as I reasonably could. Used to be this, it was called a Nissen plication. It was a big, difficult surgery. They had to open up the chest and abdomen both and work from both sides. Now they mostly do the surgery just through a little laparoscope with a couple of little puncture wounds on your belly. They pull the stomach back down into the abdomen and either put in just a couple of looping stitches or staples across that that hernia, across that defect, and close it up so that things can't run, you know, back up. They only come down.
Okay.
So it's not that difficult a procedure to do. There are guys that are really, really good at it. It's a much smaller procedure now with the modern laparoscopy approaches. So I'd say the odds are if you've got that chronic problem, fix it.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I definitely want to get that fixed so you avoid the malignancies. Yeah.
Because, you know, esophageal cancer is a killer.
That is.
So you don't want to get that.
Years ago. So a question that came up in my research anywhere is that, that the surgery, the fix could last anywhere from 2 years to 10 years. Is that correct or is that changed now?
It's pretty much changed now. Most of the guys I know are getting long-term results, but you know, you need to talk to the surgeon to see what his personal results are. You know, one of the things I wish we had a way to evaluate physicians better than we do. You know, that one of my sad quasi jokes is that, you know, if you're the bottom of your class in Annapolis, they call you the anchor. If you're the last man in your class at West Point, they call you the goat. And if you're the last man in your class in medical school, they call you doctor, just like the first guy in your class. And, most surgeons are pretty darn good. A few are awful. And a few are geniuses. And I'm picky. I want the absolute best guy working on me. The problem is, who is that?
Yeah.
And how do we really know? And there's very little in the way of objective testing. Even board certification tells you put in the extra years to do the residency, but it doesn't say, you know, how good your innate skills are. So what you really want to do is to get that particular surgeon's long-term results. You know, when the people you did 10 years ago, have they had to come back and get it redone or not? Okay. In the olden days, that would have been a big whoop. In modern with laparoscopy, it would not bother me as much having to do a redo.
Sounds like he would get a lot of relief if he did that surgery.
When this surgery is done well, they get wonderful relief.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, I'll give that a shot and I'll ask the questions. Thanks for the information. And one quick thing, you had a patient call in a while back about sciatica.
Yeah.
And when I was working out with a trainer that knew his stuff, we did something called nerve flossing. So you would lay on your back, put your arms straight up, perpendicular to the floor, and then you would raise your right leg while simultaneously lowering your right arm. And then you would reverse that procedure. And he said that would kind of help loosen up those nerves from your fingertips down to your toes. And then you do it on the left side as well. And, you know, because he said they kind of get stuck sometimes in those little spots you were talking about. And that might help your patient if he's still listening.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I have no experience with that technique, but Well, if it works, it certainly sounds innocuous. It's not going to do any harm, and it might help.
Maybe do it to music. Could be a cool dance.
That's true.
Nerve floss.
That's right. We're nerve flossing. All right.
Yes. Thank you, Rob, for that. Okay, you know what? We have time for one or two more calls and nobody on the line. If you have a question, we would love to talk with you. Now is the time to call at 800-465-8770. A few minutes left with Dr. Pentland and Dr. Mixon. So if you have a question, you've been waiting, now's the time. 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. We do have a caller we're going to get to in just a moment. But Dr. Pentland, you know, our last caller was talking about the heartburn and what possibilities that could be. He mentioned his mom was always popping Tums. His kids have the issue. Could that be a hereditary thing if it is a hiatal hernia?
Well, it seems like there may be something structural there that may be hereditary or some other kind of physiological hereditary aspect to it. But if there isn't a hiatal hernia and people are, you know, having those GERD symptoms,
issues,
then, you know, there are some things you can do to support digestion, close that lower esophageal sphincter if it's too relaxed, and also protect the esophageal lining. You want to help with certain things that can provide like a mucilage layer to reduce the, you know, acid effect on the esophageal tissue. Things like deglycerizing a licorice, marshmallow root, they provide a little bit of...
Marshmallows and licorice? Is that what I heard you say?
not the kind in the hot chocolate. This is actually marsh as in swamp and mallow as in plant.
Okay.
The root of those actually resemble the marshmallows that you put in hot chocolate, and so that's where that name came from.
Not the same thing, though. Okay.
But they provide this mucilage layer that actually coats the esophageal lining. If you take it orally, instead of a capsule form, you can like mix it in some water, and that might help. It's not a replacement for Prilosec, but if you still have the burning, that's still you know, that still may be necessary. But that is one thing that you might be able to do.
All right, we do have a couple callers. Let's get to them. Susan from Bellevue, fast on the phone. Good morning. What can we do for you, Susan?
Hi.
Two questions. One is probably more important than the other, but the first one is I have neuropathy in my feet from chemo years ago, and I'm getting a laser treatment for it. Almost done. It hasn't helped. Any other ideas?
Yeah, I've known a lot of guys doing the laser treatments. I haven't been overly impressed with them. There are some things you can try. I've got
one qualification I need to mention. I have kidney issues, I can't remember the name of it, but anyway, I can't take any drugs or supplements that might be hard on my kidneys.
Okay. So what we're looking for are things that will improve the microcirculation in the feet anyway. Let me ask you a couple of questions about you. Is it worse when you wake up in the morning and first get up, or does it get better during the day? Does it get worse during the day? What happens from morning till evening with your symptoms?
Yeah, it's worse as I'm on my feet throughout the day.
All right. So you get some relief when you first wake up in the morning, and then as the day goes on and you're busy doing things, it gets worse and worse. Is that's accurate? Okay. So that's kind of interesting.
Is there varicose veins as well?
No.
Okay, good. So tell me a little bit about your kidney disease. Do you know what your creatinine is?
Yeah, I watch it. I can't remember right now, but let me see if I can get that. It kind of goes up and down, but it's not real high. It's maybe 1.5 5 or something like that.
Okay.
But so I can say the name of kidney disease.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm looking here. Wait. It's something nephritis, acute tubular nephritis, acute tubular interstitial nephritis.
Okay. Well, it's not acute anymore. It's now a chronic.
Chronic, wow.
You know, chronic, just acute means it's a sudden onset and it doesn't last a long time. By the time it's lasted more than a year, it is by definition chronic. Okay, so we've got chronic kidney disease. Yeah, interstitial nephritis. All right. So what we're looking for with you is anything we can come up with that will increase blood flow and enhance stem cell activity so that you can try to repair this. Couple of things I can think of. Before I agreed to treat you, I'd want to do a little literature search though. Assuming that I was going to do something about you, I would try to decrease the number of senescent cells you've got. Senescent cells inhibit healing and growth, and they inhibit the stem cells from doing their job to repair the damage and improve your kidney function. So the question is, would I dare use dasatinib and quercetin on you or not? The quercetin I know would be safe. The dasatinib I'm not sure about. I'd have to do a little research on dasatinib's effect on kidney function. The other thing that I would be more comfortable with would be rapamycin. And if I could do both, I would, because the dasatinib is the most effective way in the short term of decreasing fibrosis and causing things to heal and repair, and the quercetin rapamycin is the best long-term solution we've got to have you not produce as many senescent cells. So, and we know that in several diseases involving fibrosis, rapamycin has shown significant improvement, for instance, in people with Crohn's disease in the upper GI tract. So those would be two things that I would want to take a hard look at. Rapamycin, about 95% sure I'd be willing to treat you with that. And the other one is probably 50-50 until I get more literature search. But those are probably would probably be our best bet to get you improved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's not crippling, but along with other things that I have, it just, you know, part of the problem, I have to wear orthotics and a tennis shoe, and I prefer sandals because it's more comfortable for the neuropathy, but I have a bad tendonitis in one foot, and so I have to, maybe that, and so the constriction of the shoes makes the pain in the neuropathy worse.
Yeah. So, see, decreasing all those inflammatory changes would be really important with you. So we'd be looking to get you on the most aggressive anti-inflammatory program we could.
Got it. So. All right. That is very helpful. Do you have time for one more question?
Boy, you know what? If you are able to call our other show, which starts in about 1.5 minutes, ask the producer. He'll give you the number, and we can take that because we have to go in 60 seconds. Oh. Okay?
Okay.
Phone number.
All right. Yep. All he right. will give it to you. Thank you so much, Susan. All right. This has been Leading Edge Medicine, and we're glad you're in. Boy, we've had nonstop phone calls since the beginning of the show. So 2 hours, the doctors can breathe for just a minute, take a sip of their tea and their coffee. And we're going to do this again here very soon. Thank you for joining us today. We will be back in the studio next week. And if you need to get a hold of us, or you have questions, or you want to schedule that health analysis, or maybe via sure. We were talking about that earlier. Or maybe the IV vitamin therapy. This is that number that you need to call for any question. 866-86-YOUNG. That number is 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll be back next week.